Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody.
We are recording
next. Actually, 2 days in a row.
2 days in a row. That's 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row.
Off to a killer 2018.
2019.
We're hitting our groove, our stride of season two here.
Yeah, I think we slacked for a few minutes there in the late 2018.
Yeah, just a little bit, but that's all right. We're here. Hey, so we are. This is my second time to do this.
Yeah.
Recording on a plane.
Can't believe it. I've never podcasted on a plane.
Well, it is awesome. First off, I just want to have conversations with these on because I can actually hear people.
What I was saying is that even if you didn't record, I could just easily hear you.
I don't have to yell at you. I could just talk normally.
Thank you. Very thoughtful.
We're somewhere on the over Dallas,
Texas.
You said Oklahoma City.
Well, we passed Oklahoma City. I think right now around close to Dallas, Texas.
All right.
And we are on our way to the third year.
Third annual
of Voices of Dentistry Summit. It's going to be happening in Scottsdale, Arizona.
It's a great event.
The first year was in Nashville. This is going to be third year. The second year was also in Scottsdale. Now this is the third year. So we're very excited because this year we don't have to worry about how our booth is going to look. We're going to be judging other people's booth and see how they did, because it's a lot of work. But I'm very excited to be on other people's podcasts, because I think last year when we did our booth, I felt like there were so many people I wanted to really talk to, but just there was not enough time because we were just recording, keep constantly back to back, to where I was wanting to talk to a lot of other people. So I think this is great idea from you saying that let's just go and crash other people's podcasts.
It'd be good. Well, look, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you've made it this far. I think we all get along and whatnot, and y'all appreciate us. And we got a lot of good episodes from BOD last year, but I think it's time to expand that a little bit and get on. So I'm just looking forward to it. It's
be fun.
And you're speaking this weekend too, which should be fun.
Yeah, that would be a cool photography. I'm talking about, well, whenever they were talking or asking like what topic, I was thinking of, I have some case acceptance, I have some implant stuff, lectures, but I wanted to do something different, and that was because I wanted to just go on and making another PowerPoint for some sort of another presentation.
Yeah.
And then I thought of, man, photography. I think a lot of doctors could benefit from having photography and adding that to their offices, be able to sell a lot of treatment plan. I have a lot of ideas, so I'm excited. Honestly, it's been taking me a good 4 days to come up with these PowerPoints.
That's good.
But it's a lot of good stuff. Well, I spent a lot of hours on it.
It's a good topic for you too, because I mean, anybody that follows you on Instagram at Dr. Payray, you know, your stuff is, your photography is really good, and as good as your clinical dentistry is, your photography makes it look even better. And so, you know, I think it's a great thing. And aside from just posting pictures on Instagram, when you can start to take good pictures, you can help sell a lot of dentistry. And that there's value in that.
There's so much value, so much added benefit. I think a part of it that made me very passionate about taking photography is that when I go back and look at my cases, I learned so much by seeing some of these cases back, and I realize, wow, this is what I did wrong. So guess what? That's not going to happen again. So looking at the picture, and because it's just so transparent, you know, you're like, okay, well, pictures say 1,000 words. I felt like, honestly, it made me a better clinician. It's making me every day to be hustle harder. Now, of course, we get upset. We don't need to get too obsessed on what angle should I take or what light and stuff. So we don't need to get carried away too much. But at the end of the day, I think it can definitely make you not only a better clinician, but also be able to run your practice in a business direction in a way that you can be a lot more profitable.
Where'd you learn your photography?
I started following, the way that I started, I guess, on, there's a website online called Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y. So I bought a camera right after dental school. I had a joined a practice that had a camera already. That was an old school camera, but still worked. What I did, I just got on Udemy and on YouTube and free lessons from some of these people that were talking about apertures, shutter stop, some of these basic settings of what you put on your camera. And then there are, like I said, there's Udemy and some Lindas and some of those companies on websites that you pay $10. And I think there are a lot of people that are like doing that, like freelancers, photographers. So I started watching those and then come back to tomorrow or whenever I was watching them, I would take pictures as they were speaking on YouTube or whatever. And that's how I started. And then Eduardo came in town. I learned from him a lot. That was mostly, that course was Eduardo Aguar. It was a lot about post-production. Like, okay, so now you took it. What are you going to do with it? Like, organize it. How are you going to Dropbox it? What are you going to do with it? Like, some of that stuff was very helpful.
They talk a lot about lighting in that course.
Yeah, there was a lot of lighting. Now, what I realized with a lot of these, I mean, honestly, I felt like the soft boxes could make a big difference. Like, having strobe light and the soft box to kind of make it a lot more smoother. Because a lot of folks taking pictures just fine, but when they added that extra element of having softbox, it makes their pictures pop a whole lot more. So it's really not the technique, it's just really added benefit of having that softbox.
That's probably where I could see where my pictures could step up is
I
from
think
that
so,
standpoint.
Because you do an amazing job. I mean, you were just showing me your stuff on your MacBook, and I was like, man, these are very good photos. But one thing I noticed that could even make them even a lot more attractive is to post with a little bit of softbox, yeah. Having the light a little bit more gentle on it, because I think the light, honestly, with photography, the more I do it, is so much more about lights than anything else. So it's talking to photographers, and I have some patients of mine over the years that I've learned that, like, okay, so I'm gonna find out what's the best technique, what is the angulation, what background I use. So some of that stuff is honestly doesn't really take much time. It's not like dentistry or implant or some of these that where you gotta practice. It's more about just knowing what you need. So part of my course tomorrow is going to be really, okay, this is the setting that I use. Here are the stuff you need, and go and practice.
Yeah, go get it.
Like, there's not much really into photography. It's not like you need to, because it's dental. Like, I'm not going out trying to take pictures of nature.
Yeah.
And sightseeing. It's like teeth. So this is the setting.
Stays from the same every time.
Yeah, so that's pretty much my goal.
What do you recommend for, like, new dentists when they're buying a camera? I mean, can they get away with a point and shoot? Do they need to make the full jump to DSLR, or you recommend a ring flash?
Very good question. And I think this is funny because you just brought up the Facebook before with this,
yeah,
and showed
that
the picture of this
camera
could be right.
And
yeah.
The smaller photo maker.
And honestly, what I recommend with anybody getting out of school is looking at the camera, not in a point of saving the money and trying to get it in a direction where, oh, I need something just shooting point, or because I think your iPhone can just do that.
Sure, yeah,
so if
I
you
agree.
Really want to invest in a camera, and I don't think it's investment, I think it's if you really want to invest in your future with the dentistry, it is a no-brainer to get a DSLR camera. Now, either I would recommend Nikon or Canon, one of those.
Yeah,
you can't go wrong with
does
them.
Another, yeah.
And just depending on, like, it's like Windows and Apples, really, it's what you prefer. I think with Nikon and Canon, you can't go wrong. So one of those, I would invest in them. I would get a body of Nikon, for example, D7500 is one thing that I heard from, or I've seen a lot of people use and very happy. I personally have D810, which is a next level up, and it's a full frame. I like full frames. It's $1,000 more. But again, it's at the end of the day, I think if you really, really, really want to go and spend good money on it, you don't really need to go over $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah.
That's how much you can get a good
camera. Well, and look, I mean, the reality is, and sometimes it's hard to swallow when you're first getting going, but like $3,000 on a good camera is pocket change.
100%.
In the amount of money you can generate.
And the amount of how much you can show. Like, for example, I have right now patients come in with tooth number 21 being broken, and they have a case where I'm like, okay, tooth number 21. The next thing I do, I go to my Dropbox. I have tooth number 21 of so many patients that I've done. I'm like, next thing I know, here you go, pictures. Here's before and after. Here's like, if they really, really want to know healing color and all that stuff, I show them. Most of them, they don't want to really know. They just want to see the pineal. So honestly, it is no brain. Like, and that's sold. Like that case, I don't have to say anything anymore. They just need to know how much and move forward. With anything you do, I feel like that documentation is the key. Like if I get like any sort of legality of issue, like I have so many before and during surgery and after that, that is just right there.
Do you find that, are you routinely taking like a series of pictures on all your new patients?
No, I felt that that was a waste of time. A lot of folks to just take, and a lot of people have been, are, they teach that. They say, oh, just to get into the habit of taking pictures. And I think that takes a long time.
Well, that could be your, that could be the way your practice is built too.
Correct. That could be. But I mean, I do have some folks that bring this whole photography down to 3-4 photos. They say these are the 4 photos you need and then take them for every single patient. I agree with that. I think that could work. However, there are honestly 33 photography photos you can take from all angles.
Sure.
And stuff.
Yeah.
And if you start wanting to get that way, then I think you get obsessed again with something that you don't really need to worry about or worth so much. Now, what do I do? Take pictures of every single full arch patient gets photography, like big time. Every single aesthetic case gets photography, like big time. Meaning, like, I definitely have it before and some during if I do any sort of videos and things, so forth. But most of my cases that I do photography on are is when the patient decides to move forward. I don't get photos at this moment. I'm not to take pictures and do a digital smile design and show them. I used to, and I spent again quite a bit of time with trying to do a DSD model with a lot of patients that didn't have the money. That goes back to making sure these patients can afford
it. Qualified, pre-qualified.
So
yeah.
That's a whole another discussion of how would we want to make sure, well, who's going to be really the one to take these photos from.
You know, and we started last year, and obviously our practices are a little different. And I have a little bigger team. We have a little different hygiene base than yours. But a big thing for me was, you know, and we do more restorative dentistry, probably just on just random crowns and fillings than you do, unfortunately. I wish I wasn't doing as many. But point being, we started, say, taking, you know, 5-6 shots on every new patient. Occlusals, buccals, smile, and retracted smile apart. And I'll tell you, what it's been great because, I mean, yes, it was annoying for them early on, but, and the pictures are not always great because I'm not taking them or they're not, you know, they're taking them and they're doing the best they can. But what I have seen is that patients tend to diagnose a lot more of their own dentistry. When they look on the screen and they see these full occlusal shots, they're like, what's that? Why that? This, that? Oh, my teeth are too yellow.
They get worried or concerned with a lot of things
they're
that we don't even worry about.
Exactly,
right,
yeah.
They're over-diagnosing stuff.
But you're like, no, that's fine. And then, oh, really? You don't care? You mean you're fine with that? I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, this, no, you're right. We need to address that. And so from that standpoint, it's been helpful. And in part of it, maybe too, because I'm personally, I'm a visual guy. So like, I'd rather show them a picture than an x-ray just because it's easier to explain sometimes. And, you know, pointing.
How does
teeth.
That work out for you? How long time are they taking to do these? And do they use a camera or the iPad or?
So good question. So, you know, it starts with ultimately in hygiene or wherever your new patients come in. Now, whether they're coming in or hygiene or consult, we block off some time to do that. So let's take a new patient hygiene appointment. Our new patient hygiene appointments are an hour and a half.
Oh, new patients?
So new patients are an hour and a half. So that way we can get all the photos we need, all the x-rays we need, all the probing, all the periodontal stuff we need. They can do the cleaning if that's what we can do that day, and gives us a little time to talk to them at the end. So that's a lot of time. And someone could be like, well, gosh, that's a lot of time. You could be seeing another patient. But my thing is, to me, hygiene's totally a loss leader. And what I mean by that is, let's say someone who does 45-minute hygiene, they may squeeze in 1 or 2 more prophies a day than I do. 1 or 2 more prophies over a week, over a year, may only accumulate $10,000, $15,000 more in production.
Okay.
Well, if I get that extra
half
30
hour.
Minutes or whatever on every patient, I'm willing to bet I'm going to diagnose hundreds of thousands of dollars of dentistry more in the time I get to have those patients to do it, so that they're not feeling rushed, they're having time to actually diagnose and get to it. Because look, if you got
plus
a new
if
patient,
you get done early, then just move on to the next one.
Exactly. Yeah. So
so with an hour and a half, that is for 8 hours a day, like how many hygienes are you looking into book
so
for each?
If you had new patients all day, that's probably four or five.
Okay.
With one
do they schedule SRPs the same time, or they have a different time for SRPs? Or?
So the, so we kind of do block scheduling. So like we block times for we have new patient blocks. We have new we have SRPs blocks. We have just regular prophy blocks, and even our regular prophys are hour long visits.
And whenever you do a new patient, and then there's you go into the room, how much time do you spend?
So this is something we're working on, because it used to be that we would spend a lot of time, and especially if they were coming through hygiene, we'd try to do their treatment plan right there in 10-15 minutes. But what happened was we'd get behind, other hygienists would be waiting. I got a crown in the other room, a filling in the other room. They're like, let's go, let's go, let's go. So this past year, we really switched to a, if the dentistry is going to be more than $2,000, we're bringing them back.
So that's what you were talking about yesterday.
So in fact, if the hygienist starts to realize that in during the appointment, because they see, okay, they need a couple crowns, fillings, ortho, whatever it is, they're going to immediately start trying to sell that follow-up appointment.
Okay.
So then the goal is not to sell the dentistry. The goal is to get them to come back. Because if they come back and they're fresh, because you got to think about this too, dude. I mean, imagine being a patient who you just came into a new office, you filled out paperwork, you meet all these people for the first time, you go back there, you've had your teeth retracted for pictures, you've had x-rays, you just had a cleaning, an hour later, you're exhausted. Do you really want to sit up and hear a 20-minute spiel about your teeth? I mean, you're ready to get out of there. You're ready to get back to work, get on with your day.
Unless so, you have a purpose that you came in for a reason.
Well, and that's a great point. Always, 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 if there's a chief complaint, we make sure to address that immediately.
Okay.
Because there's been so many times where we'll have patients come in and the doctor that they saw before was doing everything right, but they didn't address the chief complaint. And so they were like, well, I went in to get this one tooth taken care of, and they told me I needed all this other stuff.
Right. That's what they've heard, right? Yeah.
But if you take care of their chief complaint and then you do that, they're willing to listen.
Yeah. One of the things I've realized since we were talking about this is that because I get a lot of patients that come in and it's like one tooth or two teeth that are broken, but then I'm looking at the whole jaw and looking at
them
like, bro,
shit.
This is, and then how am I going to even begin to talk about this thing without the patient perceiving that I'm trying to sell them something that it's, because they come in, they're like, oh, well, this guy wanted me to do this and this. So the way I've realized to how I can help that situation is by making them understand that day that they came in, I don't want them even to, so they come in for, we don't even call them hygiene appointments, they come in for a reason.
Yeah, like an emergency exam.
Right,
or cheek
and then I just tell them, hey, this is what's going on, this is, and I take a few pictures here and there, like very quickly, and then I tell them, hey, if for me to help you, I need this and this and this, but because right now some of your teeth are covered with plaque, I'm just not able to tell you something that you may need or maybe you don't because it's just kind of covered. So why don't we change that environment to a healthy environment that day, and then I'll let you know. So they come back in for hygiene. The same patient that was complaining about, oh, this doctor wanted me to do cleaning before they even met me. And I don't want to do the cleaning. I know what my problem is. So then they came in for not the cleaning, but I send them back to cleaning and stuff. So it's kind of like going back away.
No, but that's good because sometimes, again,
like they are, yes, of course, they wasted that appointment. I mean, not wasted, but they came in just for me to tell them, hey, you need to actually do hygiene. But guess what? I have the models of you that day that you come in. I can actually tell you that day what you need. So by then, I can kind of give an idea or tell them something that they could do.
Well, I'll say, look, you know, you've come in here for this crown or this tooth. Yeah, we need to address that. But I'll always ask them, you know, would you mind if I looked around and kind of saw if there was any other smoke or any other Because especially on those emergent, like those situations where there's a chief complaint because they've broken a tooth or they something's loose or whatever, or they're hurting, I'll say, would you like me to go ahead and take a look around while I'm in here to see if there's potentially anything that could, you know, become a problem?
Right,
like
right.
This? And most always they're like, well, of course I want you to like look around. So then they've given me that opportunity, like that permission.
And you do that all for free?
Yeah.
Free consultation.
Yeah. I'll say, okay, I'm gonna take a look around. And then we're walking on an exam. You know,
right. Yeah.
Like
exam.
But then,
fee.
You know, and then so I'll look around and say, you know, well, look, you came in today. This is bothering you, or this is broken. Let's fix this. But I'd love to take some time to get you back when I can set aside some time, you know, so to make time for you to go over this and show you exactly what's going on. And most people are like, that'd be great. Let's get this taken care of. I'll get back. And we'll talk about that. And doing that has been, oh my gosh, it has been the amount of comprehensive dentistry we're doing now versus what we were doing a year or two ago is night and day.
Wow.
I mean, just larger. I mean,
it's really, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the communication that we are, the way that you're relaying that to that patient or the way that I'm relaying to them is something that was unfortunately was not brought up or relayed from the other doctors that they've gone to because of that lack of time that they didn't spend time with the patient. So that's one thing that's very important to
me. And having a good team helps. I mean, if the team, I mean, in reality, right?
Like, if you had a heads up, hey, this is what's going on before you even go in.
Yeah. So like our, I'm big on the new patient experience. And so like, I want new patients to have like an experience to come to their office. So the way it works in our office is you come in, hopefully you fill out your paperwork online. So you show up and you come in, and as soon as you come in, one of our front office people, you know, greets you by name. You know, hey, Payman, great to meet you. Glad you're here. Let me show you around real quick. Here's the coffee, here's water, bathroom, etc. Aubrey will be right with you to kind of get things going. At that point, Aubrey introduces herself, takes the patient back to the consult room, takes her back there and says, hey, you know, tell me about your dental experience. Tell me what's brought you in. You know, you're worried about things or any problems going on. Just getting to know the patient, you know, let them share their story, because a lot of times patients will, and I'm sure you get this too, they'll tell you why they left their previous dentist.
Yeah.
Like they'll literally just give you right out of the gate, oh, I left because of this. So it's like, well, perfect. Well, if as long as they don't do that, they're probably going to be good.
Yeah.
So then after that, after we've gotten to know the patient, we've gotten to know their kind of their concerns, their values, a little bit of that thing, we then hand off them to one of our assistants who's going to do all the records, pictures, x-rays.
So you see them first?
I haven't even seen them yet.
Okay. Obviously them.
So somebody sees them, does the intro, that get to know you part. That probably takes 15 minutes. Then they go to a chair. That takes probably another 15, 20 minutes. So they're getting all the records. Finally, and then while that's happening, Aubrey usually comes back to me and says, hey, here's patient. Their concerns are this, this, and this. They're here because of that. They saw us on this. They're, you know, whatever. So I know a lot of information. They're probably a case for that. Then while they're getting the records, I'm starting to look through them so that when I go and meet the patient, I kind of already have
a plan. Yeah.
What's going on. So then I introduce myself. Good. I talk to the patient. You know, we just kind of chit-chat for a second. I get in there. I look really quick, and I say, perfect. At this point, I've got everything I kind of need to do here. Let me go back, review everything. I'll meet you in the console room. We'll go over stuff. So they go over there. I go review everything. I go in. I give them a pretty quick, I try to be 5 to 10 minutes an hour. And then Aubrey take over. Give them the clinical necessary parts that I need to do. Ask them the questions. And then Aubrey close the deal.
So she's the one that comes back and then talks about financials.
Yeah, because she was the one that remember that developed that rapport early on. That was
perfect.
That met
them. That is amazing. Now, who is doing the insurance from the time that, like, how much do you know from the time that she goes back to insurance and everything's taken care of? Like, for example, from the time that you give them the treatment plan to the till the time that the patient actually sees the number.
So, what usually happens is when once I kind of have no idea where we're going, I'll go up front and tell one of our other front office people, Christina, here's what we're planning on doing. Can you run some quick preliminary numbers while I go talk to them? So by the time that I'm done with my 5-10 minutes, Aubrey's talked to them a little bit. Christina will walk in and give Aubrey the treatment plan so that we know. Now, A big thing I do is, which I think is huge, is most of us get bogged down in this stupid insurance treatment plan stuff. And what I mean by that is we go to the computer and we enter in all the codes.
Start trying to verify things and that, yeah.
Verifying. And what I do is like,
stupid codes that don't even matter. Like, yeah. I don't even need these.
Well, like, they don't know how to cover bone graft anyways. So, like, for what I'll do is I'll just say, okay, you need, this is how we close treatment. I'll say, okay, and I'll know, okay, they're Delta Dentals, they're Crowns or whatever. So I'll say, okay, you need, so we get to pricing. I'll be like, you know, you're going to need 3 crowns, 2 fillings, a root canal, and an implant. So I'll say, okay, 3 crowns. I'm just ballparking my head. That's probably $3,000. A couple fillings, it's probably $500 or $3,500. A root canal, it's another grand. That's $4,500. And then I'll say, okay, an implant, that's, let's say, $3,500. So now we're at $8,000. So I'll say, yeah, Mrs. Jones or whatever, it's looking like to do your treatment, it's going to be about $9,000. So I'll budget in a little more
than what you need,
just to make sure.
Just to be
on the safe side. Because then, if it comes back and it's $7,500, well, Christina looks like a hero. And she saved her money. So we say it's been $9,000, and we can break that down into these payments, these options. We'll give you.
Do you guys do third party finance like hair credit?
Yeah. We do in office payment plans.
Oh, you do in office too?
Yeah.
Which one's like the company that takes care of it, or you actually?
So we do whatever we need to do to get the deal done. So that way, instead of wasting 30 minutes
trying to do the insurance thing,
I have a pretty much ballpark idea of what it's going to be. And then if it comes back and it's less, well, then it's perfect. Good. That's good. If it comes back and it's more, I'm going to eat it.
One of the questions that people ask is that, do you always give them that ballpark figure in chunks? Like, for example?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't start to break it down like cars. Because nobody's going to tell you $80,000. They're going to be, hey, this is going to be about $300 a month.
Right. And the problem I have with when we do a big treatment plan where we print it out, we give it to them, and it's got all the codes, all the line items, is that people go, oh, well, I'll do this and this.
Uh-huh.
They'll do the fillings or the cheap stuff.
Okay.
Well, that's what I can afford, so I'll do that. Well, that may be the last thing they should be doing.
Right.
They need a root canal, but they're going to pick the fillings.
So right.
My point is we've gotten to the point where we really are selling cases, like a case fee.
Case fee, right. And that's what I do ever since I opened. I've been doing it. But now that I do general dentistry more, I feel like everybody's doing, like you said, they pick and choose what they want to do because of all the lines.
Because you're probably not presenting
it. This is other general dentists that I have associated. That's how they do it. Like, they've been giving them options. Like, oh, okay, well, you could do this or that. And of course, what are they going to do first? They're going to be doing the cheap stuff, like some of the things that just fillings and maybe some of the ones that are not really going to
help. They do the Crown of the Year Club, so they never get healthy.
Right.
And so if you can develop a case fee, and then you can develop a way for them to pay for
it. This is how much it's going to be.
Fix you. Get you caught up. And then you can figure out a way to pay for it with the payment plans, third-party financing.
I love it.
Then
patients appreciate that a lot more. Yeah.
And then it's allowing you to do more
dentistry
in one sitting on one patient, more profitable.
Put them to sleep. Talk about sedation.
We love that.
Going from photography to sedation.
So I'm finally getting my sedation. You finally got me to do it.
I think honestly, I get that question a lot on Instagram because a lot of people see I do IVs and they're like, oh, is that a good investment? And because they've been so afraid of doing it because of all the people that say, oh, you can't do this because that's me. I need to do this because I went to school longer and residencies. And unfortunately, there's a lot of missed opportunities for a lot of very smart general dentists that could do IV sedation very safely on their patients. I think it is safer than oral. In my opinion, IV sedation is safer than oral. Because I have done both. I have both permits. And when I used to do sedation for oral, I could not control these people. I didn't know some people would overreact and some people will not even reply or respond. Like, they're like looking at me like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, this is, I can't,
Did
I'm not
give
ready.
Anything? Yeah.
So
you're waiting an hour and a half to get them more sedated.
Right. And then it was just so much to be, but as soon as I started IV, man, I mean, it is the best investment. And I'm not talking about the fee just to charge the IV, but I'm talking about the, like you just said, it in one sitting, do the everything, like 4 or 5 hours. We do SRPs, we do RX cleanings. If I need to do any sort of extraction, bone grafting, fillings, or anything like that, all done in one or two settings, and patients are done. Now, you talk about the acceptance, shoot. Especially with some of the patients, because they don't have time to keep coming for a few things every now and then. So just to offer IV sedation, I think that's a very, very cool thing. Not cool, but also unfortunately, like I said, it's a lot of myth out there with it. I think, honestly, a lot of older dentists and seasoned dentists have been very, very scared from a specialist thinking, oh, because if I do it, and I think with younger people getting out, being a little bit, I wouldn't say too brave, but just to be able to, if you can study these stuff, like what could go wrong, some of these airways and ACLS and training for it. Like, for example, I go to meetings at ADSA, these American Dental Society Anesthesia, like the dentist, American dentist, for the sedation, and it's no brainer. I mean, like, you can do so much more with sedation and IV than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, oral could be potentially it's a good, I mean, for me, it was like a gateway drug into it. It was good. I loved it. I've used it a lot. It's been beneficial. I saw lots of the negatives, and I never felt like I was in a dangerous spot, you know. Right. I'm sure I got people that are like, you know, like, well, they're really sedated. I never like think, oh gosh, but the biggest thing was I like you says, there's a level of predictability that IV is going to bring me that you have that I don't. And you know, it may be that 8 out of 10 patients come in with oral and they're perfect, but the two that don't, well, they ruined it for everybody, because now that's taking up more time in my schedule. You know, they're not sedated enough. I can't get them sedated enough. You know, then they all of a sudden they're like super sedated. I mean, they'll be like, you know, those patients are worse. Like the ones that are wide awake, nothing's going on. Next thing you know, they're like, you're having to keep their chin tilted to breathe. So yeah, I think that I'm super excited, because to be able to push a drug and do it. Now, on that note, made me think of this. I'm excited about that. Do you, docs actually teaches, that was telling me, a good bit of utilizing oral with IV. So a lot of times their patients will come in for IV already, maybe had a triazolam or something like that. That way they're, for the, like when you're getting the IV and stuff like that, they're already sedated. Are you doing that much?
Absolutely. Okay. I actually,
tell me one kind of the thing, to me.
Yeah, so one of the things I learned by the IV training that I've had is giving them something a night before to make them relax from a prior night. Diazepam. Like I give them 10 milligrams, like 2 tablets of 5. That is something that's helping a ton. Now, when they take that, for example, most of my appointments, I like my IV sedations to start early in the morning, like 7, 8 in the morning. Yeah. So whenever we do that, we try to get most of these people sedated ahead of time. So I give them in the morning of, I also give them a milligram of alprazolam or Xanax. Now, some people do triazolam. You could do that too. No problem. I just had the better luck with alprazolam more. With just 1 mg about 2 hours before their appointment. Then when they get to the office, they're already a little bit relaxed in a way that not only they are cool with me giving an injection through their veins, like IV, for example, because a lot of people also, that's needle too.
Oh gosh, that's terrifying to me. Yeah,
that's definitely another thing. Also, I'll put them on nitrous to get the vasodilation, like I get them to get the veins out and popping. So my protocol is like, for example, if I have a patient at 7 o'clock in the morning, my assistant gets them 7 o'clock in the morning, like they get back. And she starts the nitrous. And about 5-10 minutes later, I go into the room, about 5 minutes really. And I start my IV. And that's it. I mean, I start 7:10, 7:15 for my surgery. And that way I can kind of get out early, like pretty much start early and be done quick. And when I used to do oral, let's think about, okay, well, 7 o'clock, is she going to be, how sedated is she going to be? How much is it going to, like, so there was just so much to go on, but now it's a little bit more regulated in a way that everybody's pretty much the same protocol. They get that IV or the oral ahead of time, like you said. And I recommend it. I think some people don't, they're kind of against it. And that's because they want to know exactly what's in their body at every single situation. So, for example, at the moment that if somebody took an alprazolam, and that's why I only give them one mg. I don't want to give them too much. You just give one mg and they're pretty out of it. I don't have to give them IV as much. Because the whole point of the IV is as long as they are comfortably asleep or out of it, you don't have to push anymore. When I didn't have the oral implemented into it, a lot of people were needing a lot more, I felt like. So I had to push more drugs. So that's one thing I felt like it's more comfortable with.
When you could kind of combination it like that.
Correct, yeah.
And you're using Versed and fentanyl?
Correct, yeah. That's pretty much Versed, fentanyl. In some cases, I use Benadryl, like very rare, sometimes like 20 mg of Benadryl. And in very like different cases, I use Decadron, 8 mg, like 2 milliliters of 4 mg per ml. That is Decadron. And that helps with, steroid. That helps with their swelling tremendously. What I've been reading a lot lately is some papers are coming out saying the growth and the healing is slowing down with the steroids, with the implants and bone grafting. So I've been reading a little bit of those case reports. I don't know if I need to go back and see what type of, how legit were they, but that's pretty much what I've been doing, steroids on select cases.
So you're kind of wondering,
is it really delaying the growth?
Yeah, is it helping or not?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It cracks me up on a plane because you got a lot of people sleeping and some of these people are just like mouth wide open, just like
they have a sleep apnea.
It's hysterical. All right, well, this has been good. This is a good little interesting podcast here. I got
it was good.
A lot of good content, photos, new patients.
I'm excited to talk tomorrow about the photography.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be good. I'm pumped for it. All right, buddy. Well, tune in next time to the Millennials podcast, and we hope to see
you. We're going
to
bring you Scottsdale next.
Yeah, we'll be. There's going to be some.
And I'm excited to see some of these people.
It's going to be
good. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.